From the Art Center in Carrboro, this is Claudio's Speakeasy and Radio Theater, a program that has fascinating guests, lively talk and conversation, community news, storytelling, and a look at our local entertainment scene. Good radio and always a few surprises. Now here's Claudio.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for tuning us in. This is the Speakeasy coming at you this morning. I have the privilege of sharing the morning with historian Bob Crowley. He's going to catch us up on some things.
Good morning.
Morning, Bob. Also, actor Will Williams is here, and Rocco and myself. And we're just going to talk about the year that was and sort of catch up on points of interest. No, nothing particular planned for today except some good conversation, good music, and the usual at the Speakeasy, where you never really know what's going to happen. Rocco, why don't we start out with a tune, and then we'll ease into this reality. Again, thank you, folks, for tuning us in. And here we go. Bob, welcome to the show. It's been a while since you've been here.
Yeah, thank you. I missed the place.
Well, I'm sure it'll be more frequent. I know you've gotten caught up with all kinds of things for the Apex Arts Council, which, by the way, is also a sponsor of the show.
Yes.
I want to acknowledge very quickly the Historic Carolina Theater as well, before I trip over my tongue all day and forget.
Oh, you can't forget that.
You had some interesting quotes you dug up, and I thought that might be a good way to start the conversation.
Well, I was playing around with things that I might talk about here, and the history part, of course, is knowing that we are 100 years now from the start of the Great War in Europe, World War One.
To call any war great, I have a bit of a
trepidation
about.
Well, it's great as in the sense of large.
Yes, right. True.
The two quotes I thought I'd throw out here are from people of that era, and one of them is the quote, "Terror is an instrument of social hygiene."
That's interesting. Who came up with that one?
That was Leon Trotsky. You know, we always figure he was one of the ones that took Russia out of the war and helped it end, but that was his formula. But then from one of the great warriors of the war, we find that he said, "Murder of a man is still murder, even in warfare." and that was the Red Baron himself, Manfred von Richthofen.
Interesting to come from that kind of a source, which also causes me to reflect on what Ernest Hemingway said, no matter the justification for war, remember, it is always a crime.
Yeah, and it basically the same thing. And, Richthofen knew. He did what he had to do, but he knew that what he was doing was not exactly the correct thing to be doing.
I'm sure that what war in any on any level or in any country for any country does to anyone psychologically, realizing that what you have to do with your personal value system is completely out the window when you're basically being dictated to as to what you're here for.
Well, I did Vietnam, so I know exactly what you're talking about there.
Yeah. Speaking of that, let's go a little into your own, your personal biography. I realize I've had you on the show so many times, but I've rarely actually explored who is Bob Crowley.
Well, I was born in a log cabin in the middle of New York City. No, not quite.
Right.
Not quite.
The New York of old, eh?
Yeah. It was a long time ago, and if you ask my grandchildren, they'll tell you it's even further back than I'll admit to. But no, it was slightly before the Battle of Antietam.
I'm going to adjust your mic for a second.
You can adjust anything you wish. I will stay with it, though, so that everybody can hear me. Yep.
Stay about that distance, exactly, and we won't get any pop in there.
I know exactly where we are here.
We're flying this. We're learning to fly this puddle jumper all over again. I think the system just got fixed, and all of a sudden it's picking us up really well.
Oh, boy. I think that's wonderful there. But anyway, you want to know where it all started? We go back to 1948.
I thought you were dropped off by aliens, but you continued to argue that point.
Well, I was. They landed on the roof of Margaret Hague Maternity Hospital in Jersey City, New Jersey, and let me out. And they found a poor wretch of a woman, and they gave me to her, and that was my mother. And that's where everything started. So I'm actually originally a Jersey boy, only I try not to admit that as much as possible. But I grew up essentially in northern New Jersey on the cliffs above the Lincoln Tunnel, looking out my bedroom window at the Empire State Building, only 2.5 miles away across the river. And as I got old enough to do it, growing up on the streets in New York, Times Square, the Theater District, Hell's Kitchen, a little bit of the Village, a little bit of here, a little bit of there.
Let me stop you for a second. Whatever brought that name about, Hell's Kitchen? I've always been curious about actually calling a place Hell's Kitchen.
Well, it was called that primarily because it was an area of tenements. It was an area of low-cost housing. Low-cost housing. And it became a bit of a, I wouldn't say a high crime, but it was a bit of a big mischief area and some crime. And the idea was that nice people didn't go there. That was where the devil cooked up all of his mischief. So
it was known for gangs, I know, but was it also known for mafia?
Not at first, but it eventually.
Well, with a name like that, you're going to draw a certain crowd, aren't you?
Yeah, actually, the gangs in that area primarily were Irish to start with, more than Italian.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, the Italians started in Lower Manhattan, but the Irish basically took what we call Hell's Kitchen, or properly known as Chelsea.
Explain that one.
Well, it was the. Most people look at New York and they think it's one big homogenous city and always has been. No, not really.
Many different cultures.
Well, many different cultures, but also many different towns. Originally, New York never went further than Wall Street. So it was the New York's city that originally was founded was the extreme tip of Manhattan Island. And then as you went north, you passed through the Village of Greenwich. Mm-hmm. Which was named after Greenwich, England, and that was there. And then you went a little further, and there was the Village of Chelsea and the Village of Harlem and so on. These were all villages along the way.
So you're saying Chelsea got nicknamed?
No, that was the name of the town.
Ah.
And then it was incorporated into New York later on. But the name of the town still hung on as the neighborhood name.
Okay, going back to the Hell's Kitchen, how's this tie in?
Well, as the city moved north, it grew north, the area around Chelsea became the spot where a lot of the poor folks lived. They always lived on the outskirts of things, and that's where the gangs grew up. So by doing that, that became known as, well, you don't want to go there because that's where the devil cooks up all of his mischief.
Nah.
And where do you cook things up? You cook things up in a kitchen. So that was Hell's Kitchen. And that's where Chelsea became Hell's Kitchen.
Interesting. Okay, now back to your bio.
Back to my bio. I thought that was... No.
No, I sort of took a side road.
Well, that's
through Hell's Kitchen.
That's the basic thing. Like I said, I grew up on the streets, and I was one of the guys that your mother said stay away from, and she was right. She was definitely right.
I like that Jimmy Buffett line. We are the people our parents warned us about.
Exactly, and I definitely was one of those. And then I was probably the more intellectual of the group.
I see,
and I got from there.
Intellectualism in Bohemia.
Yeah, but the other thing was hanging out in and around the theater district and such. I got very attuned into the theater, the arts. I used to haunt the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Museum of Modern Art, and you name it, I was there all the time. And that's kind of where the art background came from. And then as I went further along and went to college, I took a degree in history, which is one of my bachelor's degrees, and that also included some art history. I originally decided I was going to be a high school history teacher. And then about halfway through my first year, somebody showed me what high school history teachers made for a living. I got an MBA instead. So, but I still kept the history degree, and I had a little minor in education. So,
and of course, you have a considerable background in railway as well as seafaring and so on.
A little bit. The railway thing came starting about when I was about 4 or 5 years old. My grandfather gave me a Lionel train. And of course, everybody of that era had that.
I remember those.
The thing. Now it's an Xbox, but back then you had to have a Lionel train, and I had that, and we'd set it up only at Christmas, and I'd look forward to that, and I'd play with the train and the whole bit, and then my father would take it down for another year, and eventually I got them to let me have part of the basement, and I had it set up all year. So that developed the love of trains that I've never lost. And for a while, I've even worked for railroads. I was.
I know you do a newsletter for the. Cue us into what that organization is.
The organization is the North Carolina Railway Museum. We are located in Bonsall, which is 9 miles south of Apex on Old US 1. And we operate down there, outdoor primarily, although we're working on an indoor building next, museum of historic and heritage railroad equipment. Plus, we also have a train that we operate as the New Hope Valley Railway. And that runs about a 9 mile round trip. Up into the woods and back down. We have diesel locomotives.
Is that usually on Sundays or Saturdays and Sundays?
It goes back and forth. Most of the operations are on Sundays. And if you go to the website, triangletrain.org, .com, or NHVRY, which is the New Hope Valley Railway.com, you can find out the schedule and so on. Most of the time, the operations are on Sundays. We do have some Saturday operations. We also have a number of special events throughout the year. We have a number of what we call our Brew and Chew events. And these are evening events. We have local wineries and breweries come in, and they have beer and wine for sampling, and we have train ride, and we have a lot of fun. And no, the crew is not allowed to touch any of the alcohol under pain of death almost, that they cannot do it. Once we shut everything down, different story. But
the brew and chew metaphor kind of sticks in my mind. Is this beer you can chew, or what are we talking about here?
It's chew as in C-H-O-O.
Chew-chew. Okay.
Yeah. I didn't make up
I know I'm mixing my metaphors here this morning, but I'm just trying to catch everything.
Yeah, I understand, but I didn't name it.
Brew and chew.
But we also do some other fun things. We, we're talking about having an exhibit of historic automobiles, and we've done that before. In June, we're doing a recreation of a Civil War battle that involved a train.
Oh, yeah, you told me about this.
Yeah, this is going to be quite a big deal. We've got about 100 reenactors coming. We've got cannon. We've got horses for a cavalry charge. It's going to be quite an event when we do it. So it's the scenario is based on the so-called Battle of Morrisville, which did occur in 1865 as the Confederate Army was retreating out of Raleigh. But we're not doing it in Morrisville, so we can't really call it the recreation.
And there wasn't an airport anywhere in sight at the time.
No, they were probably over there building something, but there was we were doing
no
that.
Great flying machines back in those days.
And then of course also the other big events we have is we have our Halloween trains at Halloween.
Ah, yes,
and those we run in the evening with people doing spooky stuff in the woods. We had this year we added a new one in that we had an actual live flying witch. And that freaked out a bunch of people. But we what we did is we rigged up a zip line in the trees where you couldn't see it. And we had his lady who agreed to do it. She was up there on a broom on the zip line zipping along by the train. And it surprised some people.
Bet,
you know, you don't usually see a real flying witch. So we had that. And then we just finished, of course, last month, and we'll do it again next year. Our Santa trains with Santa Claus on board the train. That's always the first two weekends in December, both Saturday and Sunday. And with Santa Claus, we have actually the real one. He comes down. He practices. We're his practice.
Didn't realize you had a chimney.
No, he.
He comes down the choo-choo. Here we go again. All right.
Yeah, well, he's been in Florida for his usual vacation, and so he comes to us to practice, and he does the Macy's Parade, of course, first, and then he comes down to us to get some practice, and then he goes and back to the reindeer and freezing and all this good stuff.
Does the Macy's Parade, punches out a few Santa Clauses while he's there, and comes back.
Oh, yeah, and we always have some fun with that. I know that when the Santa Claus goes through the train, you don't go to Santa. Santa comes to you, and he has an elf with him. And the elf
don't block the passageway. Yeah.
The elf has a bag of, or two bags. One is filled with candy canes. The other is filled with lumps of coal. What would a railroad be without coal? And we have some people that come just to get the coal so they can prank kids and whatever. But this year, this 93-year-old woman is sitting there, and Santa goes over and, ho-ho, little girl, well, have you been good this year? And she says, no, Santa, I'm a bad girl. I've been bawdy all my life. So he reaches back, and he gets a lump of coal and hands it to her, and she puts her hand up and shouts out to everybody, see this? I'm a bad girl.
Great.
93, so.
Well, on that note, before we explore your life any further, since we keep getting trapped in these little ditches to explore, let's go to some more music and ease up the listener a little bit.
Of science is endlessly fascinating, and some of the world's most significant science is going on right here in the Triangle. This is Ernie Hood. Join me Wednesdays at 11 a.m. for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science Community, right here on WCOM LPFM.
This is WCOM Community Radio, and now back to Claudio.
And I'm going back to Bob. Okay, let's go a little bit into your seafaring experiences. You spent some time working on ships at sea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was with Captain Hook and the Blackbeard.
We thought so, yes.
Yeah. Now, I worked for railroads. I started out working as a passenger trainman for the New Haven Railroad. I was one of those guys collecting tickets and all that. But I quickly transferred over to the freight service in the office because it was cold out there. And so I moved into that, and then that was not going much of anywhere. So a friend of mine found out that there was a new steamship line forming, a company called Trans Freight Lines, not a very imaginative name, but it was still there, and he asked if I would be interested in moving over to that place, and I said, yeah, sure. So I wound up going over and becoming what was called a customer service clerk. I arranged in-country transports for containers coming off our ships from Europe. That's where we went. And I spent some 25 years in that business.
You must have liked it.
Oh, I loved it. It was great. The folklore, the romance of the sea, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It was right up my street. And I moved from there. I finally finished up as assistant vice president of marketing when I finally retired from the company. But
I know you traveled all over the world.
Well, I mean, because of that, I got to. I was assigned a number of places. I mean, the company's main office was in Wayne, New Jersey, just outside of New York City, but they also transferred me for anywhere from 10 months to 2 years at a time to Columbus, Indianapolis, New Orleans, San Francisco, Seattle, Montreal, London, Rotterdam, and Jeddah.
What a great route.
Oh, yeah. I not necessarily in that order, but that's where I wound up, and it was rather interesting picking up cultures and languages all over the world that way.
No doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I even speak British English fairly well, don't you know? and I can do Canadian English too, eh?
Yes.
So. You know, that's kind of the hallmark. I know after 2 years in Montreal, I caught myself saying A at the end of things without realizing it.
That's easy enough, yeah.
You know, so it picked up. But I managed to learn a little Dutch, a little German, a lot of French, and a bit of Arabic. I would never want to try it right now because I'd probably insult the prophet if I did.
Look out.
No, I don't want to do that. I heard what happened in France. But I spent a lot of time. I made crossings on our ships just for the experience of doing it. So I have been to sea on a container ship. And that's quite an experience.
I imagine it is.
9 days out there alone. Can anybody even listening here go for 9 days without television? That's quite.
Yours truly, right here. But then again, I spend time at sea.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. But I don't think I could go 9 days without WCOM. I mean, it just would be impossible. You know, that's part of your
chalk
life.
That down as a promo.
Yeah. Absolutely. And by the way, give money.
Right. There we go. We need your support.
Oh, yeah. Well, I do. I give money every
speaking event. Of which, the Apex Arts Council got to kick some back in, which is happening.
So I spent all that time, but I got to do some really amazing things in that because of the positions I was in, I became, I hate to say expert, but expert in international trade documentation. This is the boring part of it, the paperwork, the bills of lading, and the certificates of insurance and all that stuff I got there. So I wound up getting appointed through an organization called the National Council for International Trade Documentation.
I would say that would be the legalese compared to what we think. Yeah.
Well, that actually got me an appointment for a couple of years as part of the U.S. delegation to the United Nations for trade facilitation. I wasn't a diplomat. I didn't do trade negotiations, but we designed the standard form bill of lading that's used by steamship lines over the world, all over the world even today. It got me to go to Geneva 3 times a year to go to meetings and sit in the UN and had my the delegates pass and all that good stuff. I could go to all the places that aren't on the tour. And that was kind of fun. The thing I'm most proud is that through that I got appointed to a committee at the International Chamber of Shipping and the International Chamber of Commerce in Paris, and we were rewriting a bill, a law. This is generally known in the United States as COGSA, the Carriage of Goods by Sea Act. It's based on a law that was agreed originally, I think, back in 1640. And the way that that worked, that is the governing rule for carrying goods at sea for all countries of the world. This is what you carry, the terms and conditions you carry it on. Since 1640, it had only been updated four times. So that's a pretty good law. We did the fifth update. And I remember I managed to get into one of the meetings there and mentioned that the law had been in effect so long, it had to have been written very well. So those folks back in 1640 thought real hard about what they were doing. So I proposed a paragraph.
Kind of makes you think of the Founding Fathers, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So I proposed this paragraph to put into the law, and everybody considered it for a few minutes, and they finally said, yeah, that's a good idea. We should put that in there. So my paragraph is in there, and that paragraph covers the use of COGSA for shipments to outer space.
Uh-huh.
And that's in there, and that's one of the things that I'm kind of proud of having done, is having written that part of the law. And it has been used. During the Seattle World's Fair, the Soviet Union sent some of their exhibit materials in a satellite. They put it in a capsule, they sent it up into space, looped it around the world a few times, splashed it down in the Pacific Ocean right off Seattle. A U.S. destroyer or something picked it up, brought it in, and it was carried in the satellite under the paragraph that I put into COGSA.
Not bad.
So that's my immortality.
Well, on that note, let's go to a little more music, and I'm going to open it up to a little more of a public forum amongst ourselves here to talk about the year that was, and then we're going to get back to some more of Bob Crowley as well.
Tune to your community radio station, 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro.
You found the right station for what you like and want on the radio, WCOM 103.5 FM. And now, back to Claudio.
And you better believe it, you did find the right one. we're hanging out here. And I wanted to sort of turn the conversation before I continue with the biography of the immense biography of Mr. Crowley here. I just sort of want to bounce around the room a bit and talk about maybe any significant things from the year gone by. Bob, anything you can think of?
Well,
looks like we're handling it here first.
Significant things from, like I said at the beginning, that is the 100th anniversary of the Great War, World War One, and that's significant.
You were also tying something into the Martin Luther King Robert E. Lee. Give us
right.
that scoop.
Well, yesterday, of course, was Martin Luther King Day, and that's not necessarily on his birthday. That is decided as a specific day in January near his birthday so that it fits in always on a Monday. There's a law in the United States called the something about when holidays can be. So they try to push them onto Mondays and or Fridays, primarily Mondays, so that you get three-day weekends. But that also makes for an interesting juxtaposition, since not only was it Martin Luther King Day yesterday, which a gentleman, of course, we all respect and love and whatever, but it was also Robert E. Lee's birthday. So not necessarily celebrated everywhere, but that is an important thing and an interesting juxtaposition.
No doubt.
Yep.
Yeah, it's amazing how many paradoxes there are in life. Will, I want to bounce over to you. You want to catch us up with any scoop from the movie, as well as just what you enjoyed about the year gone by? I know you've made a few accomplishments.
Yeah, last year was great, focused on the movie No Child. And we're currently waiting for the world premiere location. We've submitted out to some Academy qualifying festivals, and we're waiting to hear back to see if they want to host our world premiere.
Perfect. I know I've just given the piece of artwork that Rob's going to use for the poster, one of my pieces
right.
of art.
Looks great.
We'll see what all that turns into.
Of course, I did the part of the design.
Yes, you did. Absolutely. It was done in the Crowley studio. I brought it over and said, okay, how can we play this? And of course, another thing for you is you're slowly but surely becoming the co-host of Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater.
Right. I'm sitting here learning from the master, Mr. Rocco himself.
Yes. The number two co-host, and Rocco is the number one co-host. Rocco is actually educating Will. He's learning from the very best as to how to run the board.
I'm about number nine.
Number nine. Turn me on, dead man. Right?
You got it.
So what about you, Claudio? What do you...
I am actually looking forward to taking some time off from the working world and spending some more time on my novel this year, since I just got the inheritance from my late dad, bless his soul. We finally got the estate inheritance from that. I personally wish he'd be alive to spend it himself, but I'm going to use this as a bit of a reprieve and actually work on some of my art and my novels and see if I can't put more energy into my own creativity to draw my living from that, as opposed to working technical theater or stage managing.
Now, is this the novel that I think you read me two chapters a couple weeks ago of a work that you were working on? Is that the novel?
It's actually the novel that was considered by friends. I've been performing my show Seafarers for a number of years, and there's been no reason to stop doing it because it works so well. What I've decided to do is continue it, but I change the format every so often. Just like Ira David Wood does with Christmas Carol, I keep it current, but I still perform the old classic works. And somebody approached me a while back saying, you know, this is a really interesting collection of works, Seafarers. Why don't you create an imaginative character, even if it's based on your own life, about how Seafarers came about and draw a novel out of that somehow, incorporating the work itself? So, yes, I've started creating that rather Hemingway-esque work, I would say.
So one of these days, too, the Apex Arts Council wants to get with you when you recast Seafarers to do a production of that.
And I do want to do that, and I've also promised Ira David Wood that I'd bring it back to Theater in the Park, which is where it was actually launched in 1988. So
we're going to take it on the road. We're going to do Broadway.
Hey.
North Carolina.
Let's play it. How about you, Rocco? What was some of your favorite things from last year? The year gone by.
Well, as you know, Claudio, excuse me with my voice this morning, it's a little bit hoarse. WCOM is a continuing evolving station.
No doubt.
We have so many new things going on here, and they're all exciting, they're all positive. For example, your show, The Speakeasy, now that you're bringing Will in. I think he's going to be an excellent engineer, and he'll be a great co-host, and he just has to learn. He needs to learn the ropes, and he's doing it right now.
He's learning from the best.
He's doing a good job. This is not an easy thing to learn. It's like riding a bicycle. You can't learn how to run the board and be an engineer and be a co-host by reading a book about it. You have to do it.
And the best proof of that is the fact that I cannot do two things. I can't be the host and interviewer as well as running the board without getting lost in distraction to it.
I think Will is going to be an excellent engineer.
And let me also explain.
And a good co-host.
And let me also explain the reason I'm bringing Will in is not just for the technical aspect, and that's certainly a major asset, but that's really Rocco's realm. But Will and I are going to launch on some aspects of theater that I just can't do on my own that we're going to bring to the show and bring a whole new Orson Welles-type dynamic to Claudio Speakeasy.
Well, I noticed the dynamics between the two of you just in that last two-minute time period where Will was talking to you, you were talking to him, and you were in conversation. He was different then than he was when he was just trying to figure out what to do with this board.
No doubt,
And you could see how he was more relaxed just talking to you.
And we've got a few projects hanging fire that are really going to kick up some dust around here.
That's right.
So, going to bring some. I'm creating a location called the Blue Iguana. It could be somewhere in the tropics. We're not going to be specific as to where, but it's going to be a realm in which all sorts of souls meet and stories will be told by virtue of conversation.
Also, when you bring Bob in, Bob has a wealth of knowledge.
Absolutely.
About so many things.
He's been a resource for me for years.
He really is knowledgeable and experienced. He's been all over the world. And he's a great co-host, a great guest.
Yeah,
and that's very true. And he is not just one who has gone to great length to study these things, but he's lived a life accordingly, which is a very rare find. Normally, you'll find book intelligence in historians, but you rarely find the true life experience to go with it.
I got a question for Bob.
Sure.
You know, you mentioned you wanted to be a high school history teacher.
Yep.
Is there a moment in your life that sparked an interest to want to dedicate yourself to history? Or
I'm not exactly sure if there was a specific moment that I could come back. I know that I've always been fascinated by it. I know that I was always attracted to books and TV shows as a young, very young person that had to do with history or some kind of learning. It just was a part of me, and I've never really thought about where it got started. It could have been from my maternal grandfather. He lived with us, and he became my best friend for many, many years. And one of the things that he would like to do would be to go to New York City, and we just travel around New York City going to the museums. And that's possibly where a lot of it came from.
Early influence.
Yeah, we did everything. We did the Museum of the City of New York, the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
There is so much to do there.
Natural history and all like that. And that's something that's really, really missing, I think, in a lot of our culture today, is that people need to go to these places and not just see them as, dusty collections of old stuff. These are this is your heritage. This is where you came from. You know, we can always go back to the much quoted George Santana about those who don't study history are doomed to repeat it. Well,
yes.
We don't want to repeat it, so let's go study it. And that's one of the ways to do it. And that's not just history of the United States or the world, but there's natural history and everything else.
I could point to one more immediate thing: George Bush in Iraq.
Oh, bless.
That guy must not have read any books.
Yeah.
Anyway, just wanted to throw a pedal in the pond on that one.
Yeah, you sure did.
History condemned to repeat itself. There we go.
Yeah, well, I hope we don't repeat that piece
of
history.
Put idiots in charge, and that's what you get.
You know, that piece of history is like radishes. You don't want them to repeat. Anyway, moving right along.
Yes, moving right along. I think we're going to go to another breath of music and pick it up after that. Thank you. I just noticed we have the ladies of Say Yes to the Chef waiting in the wings, so that show's coming up next. But first, I want to give our show here, the Cloudy Speakeasy and Radio Theater, brought to you by the Historic Carolina Theater of Durham, as well as the Apex Arts Council, and we're going to have our moment of radio theater. This is a piece I wrote some years ago and performed with a good friend who has since passed on. It's called Wind Song, and it is... I asked a friend when I was chef of Bluebeard's Castle in St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, had a black pot washer that I became pretty close to. He was a former fisherman. And I asked him if he could sense that his time was coming, his time was near, how would he prefer to die if he had a choice in the matter? Personally, I prefer to die in my sleep, but I just figured if we have any cue that something's coming, that the moment is at hand, I asked him how he would prefer to go out. And he said he'd like to set himself a sail one more time, take a boat out to sea, and just... pass out somewhere on the ocean. So this is dedicated to my friend. I give you Wind Song.
Wind Song. I've lived my life on foreign shores as a lover of the sea, drinking down my nevermores when they wouldn't set me free. I spent my years saluting winds which gave my sails direction, and ever was it plain to see my youth in my reflection. Though now I greet my autumn season like a leaf upon the wind, who in having lived by love and reason will bear myself once more to journey. This body, though merely a shell, has truly lived and served me well. These eyes, though rugged by the years, have smiled their smiles and shed their tears. So all in all, I am rejoicing upon the sea alone, for in the winds a spirit voicing a call to bring me home. I pray the prayer of every sinner and poets much alike, that my spirit clothes me a winner upon that final hour's strike. And as I journey from here to hence, where there is neither gate nor fence, as an older man, I must concede, a wind song now is all I need. So all in all, I am rejoicing upon the sea alone, for in the winds a spirit voicing a call to bring me home.
And now back to Claudio.
And the music you just heard was performed by Gary Jensen on guitar and harmonica, and my friend died a couple of years ago, and I just want to give that out as a big thank you to him. He was my backup man in the Virgin Islands. God, what we did and didn't do together is pretty amazing. Gary, wherever you are, thank you. And now, back to the conversation we just had.
Well,
continuing that on, we keep on catching up, catching on more about Bob Crowley's life here. You had something you wanted
to
start
with.
Well,
I just wanted to mention that I hope you're going to celebrate today, being National Butter Crunch Day.
Explain that, Lucy.
Well, but this is the day. There's a celebration, an observance. There's something every day of the year. And I have a huge day. This actually goes back to my college days where we wanted some excuse to drink other than just to do it. So I've come up with, we drink National Butter Crunch Day. Hooray! You know, so that was...
Sounds like something you'd say at a bar. Something to drink other than just to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Pass me that drink.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, if you need something to celebrate, you can celebrate with that way, or you can just go get a hunk of Butter Crunch and stuff it in your face.
And you can always ask Bob what day of the week it is. He'll tell you. He'll give you some history behind
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. So any New Year's resolutions, that famous word, Will, any resolutions you've made for the year or things to think about?
Yeah, one of the resolutions I have this year is Rob Underhill and I have been in the talks of another film.
Good.
Still in the pregnancy process, so I don't want to give too much away
about it.
I'm looking forward to getting the ball rolling on that once No Child has had its world premiere, and then it'll be time to
onward
start anew.
Fantastic. Good. Actually, I'm supposed to have all you guys over to my place soon for a little gourmet event, and I also wanted to introduce you to a space not very far from me, BMF Tool and Die. Belongs to Ronnie Brown, the bluegrass aficionado, and he is volunteering some of his space there for any projects we might want to use it for. And he's got some good indoor space that we could use almost as a Hollywood studio for certain footage, or even just to record and film certain performances.
And he's got some good outdoor space too.
Yes, he does. So anyway, we do have that. What about you, Rocco? Any New Year's resolutions or anything about the old that particularly intrigues you?
Well, as you know, Claudio, I'm very close and connected to WCOM, and like so many other people around here, we're always trying to improve the station and make it more dynamic.
Absolutely.
It's a voice for the people of Carrboro and Chapel Hill, and we have exciting things coming up here at this station. If the people will listen to it, and I know they will, and they're listening now, they'll hear some good things here on WCOM in 2015.
And I did want to mention, if there's anybody out there tuning in or any business that might be interested in sponsoring the Speakeasy, WCOM could certainly use the funds. Please give us a call and let us know. You can find me on www.claudioarts.com, and I'll be glad to get back to you. Speakeasy would love to have a few more underwriters, even though we do have some fabulous ones already.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I know the Apex Arts Council is kicking back in, but you've been a long supporter at this point, as has the Historic Carolina Theater.
Yeah, well, I just got to pay my bill, that's all.
That's it.
You know, if Ernie's listening, I'm going to put it in there. Don't worry.
Okay. On that note, just so we can relax, a little more music from the Speakeasy. Thank you.
You're tuned to 103.5 FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Están escuchando a 103.FM, WCOMLP, Chapel Hill, Carrboro. Thanks for listening to our station.
You're listening to WCOM, live and local, right here in Carrboro and Chapel Hill. And now, back to Claudio.
Thank you. I just want to say thank you to everyone that's been listening to the show for so long, and you've been a wonderful support system, and it's good to know that there are people out there caring about what's being said here on WCOM, and I know there are quite a few souls that cover that territory. And
well, I care about one thing that hasn't been said. You didn't tell us what your New Year's resolution is.
To delve more into my artistic side and to bring that to the fore, to make my living as the artist, Claudio, and all that entails, and believe me, there's a lot of branches to that tree.
Much a good save.
Instead of a job, that's going to be my job.
Good. Very good.
Well, that reminds me, another New Year's resolution that I have is I'd like to eat one of Claudio's famous clam bakes again. He made one a few weeks ago, and I've been telling everybody ever since. I had the best dish I've ever had in my life.
I appreciate that.
It was phenomenal. It really was.
Yep.
So I guess I'll have the culinary side kick back in as well.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
And, of course, we have the culinary show coming up next.
Yes.
Say yes to the chef. Every chef likes to hear yes.
I always say yes to the chef.
Yes. One shouldn't say anything else.
No. The only way to do it. Our culinary artists.
That's right. Absolutely. So, and I want to give a special thanks to somebody that has really been instrumental in changing the speakeasy for the not just better, but much better, and that would be Rocco. Ever since he has taken over here as my number one co-host as well as engineer, the show has really jumped up in status considerably.
Thank you very much.
Yes, absolutely.
My pleasure. So thank you, Rocco. And it has been noticed by much more than just me. And I've, of course, Will's got to having a great time here just learning the ropes from Rocco. You're learning from the best there is from a master.
Yeah, I feel like that movie, The Karate Kid, when Daniel-san's learning from the master,
go, yes.
Mr. Miyagi, that's how I feel in here.
You're painting the picket fence, are you?
CD on, CD off.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
You're going to be fine.
Well, thank you.
I think so. On that note, I think I'm going to bring the speakeasy to the wrap and make room for the next show coming right up. So, Say Yes to the Chef is walking in the door shortly. This is Claudio Speakeasy and Radio Theater signing off. Thank you for tuning us in. Until next time, cheers.